Parnell and Finkelstein here. Before today, we have House Bill 436. We have the sponsor with us, Representative Davis, if you could join us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thank you very much for hearing the bill today. House Bill 436 is legislation that will change the penalty for providing alcoholic beverages to a person under the age of 21. This bill was drafted after the tragic deaths of two teenagers in an alcohol-related incident in Ketchikan, an accident which was preceded by a 23-year-old allegedly furnishing the minors with alcohol. Under current law, furnishing alcohol to a minor is a misdemeanor with a maximum penalty of 1 year in prison and a $5,000 fine. This legislation would make furnishing a minor with alcohol a Class C felony with a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison and a $50,000 fine. We feel that HB 436 would be a deterrent. We're concerned about the incidence of alcohol abuse in the state. Obviously, this is only one little piece of it. In order to have illegal alcohol in your possession, our kids have to get it from somewhere. And this is the instance I refer to as one of something that happens constantly, which is older young people in some places, much older people, furnishing liquor to minors. They go buy it, they provide it to them. I don't think I realized, and I don't think many of us realized, how insignificant the penalty for that was until this brought it to our attention in Ketchikan. And so I introduced this legislation, and the families of the youths that were killed are with us today, and they will be testifying. It's a tough one for them. This didn't happen all that long ago. So I appreciate your patience. I looked into trying to have this bill have a name, and was told that wasn't appropriate, but I will be referring to the bill as a Smith-Nygaard bill on behalf of these two boys. And I would really appreciate your serious consideration of this. I've had a number of people offer amendments at some time. I would like to consider at least one amendment that was given to me that has to do with the kind of information or the kind of ID that can be utilized when someone is checking ID in a liquor store or a bar. And I don't need to do that today, but I certainly would appreciate the opportunity to look at an amendment either here or in the next committee of referral. We tried to give you as much information as in this the package you received from the committee as you could absorb. There is a number of a lot of other information that one of the mothers of the boys provided to you, and so you probably have plenty of information on statistics and that sort of thing. But I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davis. We'll any amendments you want to submit after the meeting, we'll take them all up at one time at the next meeting. Any questions from committee members? You're welcome to join us at the
table. I should note, Mr. Chairman, for the record, there are two fiscal notes. One from the Department of Law, which is a zero fiscal note. The one from the Department of Corrections has a $54,000 fiscal note, and I noted from that we do have somebody from Corrections here.
Okay, well, we'll go next to the administration representatives, Diane Schenker from the Department of Corrections.
For the record, Diane Schenker from the Corrections. Our fiscal note was based on an estimate of how many of these cases there would be. As I came into the hearing, got the fiscal notes from the Department of Law and the Public Defender Agency, which gave much higher numbers than our department was able to locate anywhere. In our own population, because this is a misdemeanor at present, we just don't have more. I think we have one person incarcerated. And I checked with public safety and asked the people in their research if they could give me any ideas on how many arrests there were even and or convictions. And the number I got was that they didn't have a record of convictions solely for contributing, furnishing alcohol to a minor, but that there were convictions for contributing to the delinquency of minor, which might have involved the same behavior. So at the time that this note was prepared, I just made a ballpark as of 10, and that's what that 54,000 is. If Department of Law's figure 100 prosecutable offenses is accurate, then our fiscal note would increase to 540,000.
Any questions, Representative Parnell?
I do. Fiscal notes add sometimes, but doesn't the department prioritize? So it may not necessarily be above and beyond the current budget. It could be contained within the present budget. So I chose a fiscal note to address this particular question.
Well, currently our prisons are full, and we do have some empty community residential beds, but we are already planning this year to try to expand those beds if we can, considering the budget. So if we were required to house additional people who would be incarcerated for a felony, no, I don't think that we could. You know, we can absorb a handful here and there, but for a Class C felony, we would definitely have to add a number of bed days. And this fiscal note was based on the premise that we could add all of those bed days by contract and community residential beds, which may or may not be the case. You can't. The department cannot put a felon into a community residential bed from the very first day of their sentence. So the fiscal note already took into account that we could perhaps shift, put some people who are already in a prison bed into a community residential bed to accommodate the increase from this bill. But I don't think that we could shift much more than that.
Appreciate the clarification. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Mm-hmm. You know, for the record, we've been joined by Representative Ivan as well. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Next, Margaret Caduce from Department of Law.
Good afternoon. My name is Margot Knute. I'm with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law, and we don't have a position on this bill, but I wanted to make myself available to answer any questions the committee might have about misdemeanors and felonies in general or any other area the committee might be interested in touching on.
Okay, well, I appreciate your making yourself available. Any members can ask any questions now. I think I will save my questions for after the testimony because we're so short of time today. Representative Preppler?
Could she answer, or for the chair, could you answer or describe criminal negligence more?
Yes, through the chair. Criminal negligence is the lowest mental state that the law can specify for a criminal offense. Anything less than that would be strict liability, whether you were acting, whether you were, I don't know.
It was knowingly, and these other
that's right. Intentionally is the highest, and then beneath that's knowingly, and then recklessly, and then at the bottom is criminal negligence.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Margo. Appreciate being here today. Next, we'll hear Karen Nygaard. If you could just state your name for the record.
Hey, Karen Nygaard. Hello. My husband Norman, our son Daniel, and I reside in Ketchikan, Alaska. Excuse me. Michael, our 17-year-old son, was killed on December 31st in an automobile-motorcycle collision, as was his friend Joshua Smith. Autopsy reports reveal that both boys had consumed alcohol. Michael enjoyed sports. He loved baseball, soccer, and basketball. We had discussed the effects of alcohol and its effects on a person's performance and judgment. He often commented that he felt if he drank or consumed drugs, he would not be able to perform to his full potential. He planned to serve 2 years in the Navy and then go on to an automotive school in Arizona. He was a very warm and compassionate young man. On December 31st, he made a bad choice. That choice was his to make. I feel his choice was affected by it being so easy for juveniles or minors to get alcohol. I don't think that either one of these young men would have made an effort to seek out alcohol. The alcohol was purchased by another 17-year-old and was shared with these teenagers as well as other teenagers. The fact that alcohol is so easily obtained by minors needs to be addressed. Michael made a bad choice. Nothing we will do to bring Nothing we do will bring him back to us now. But we can attempt to keep this from happening to other minors and their families. As legislators, the state constitution grants you the power to pass laws. The primary purpose of these laws is to define criminal behavior and establish criminal penalties. Criminal behavior is a public offense. As we know now, it has the ability to touch each and every one of us. By controlling crime, we emphasize the protection of society and exercise control over actual or potential criminal offenders. It's the potential criminal offenders which I would like to address. In calendar year 1991, in a district court in Ketchikan, two counts of minor in possession were filed, along with 244 counts of minor consuming alcohol. Do you have any idea how many individuals were charged with furnishing alcohol to minors? Four. The minors aren't going to tell where they're getting the alcohol. They may be getting it at home. They may, you know, I'm not saying every time they have alcohol, it's being purchased by someone that's over 21. So what is the answer to this problem? It's already a crime to furnish alcohol to a minor. We feel the answer is to provide a more severe penalty for any individual convicted of furnishing alcohol to any minor. By making furnishing a Class C felony, a more severe criminal sanction or sentence may be imposed. These and other civil liabilities exist only when a person is convicted of a felony offense, not a misdemeanor. I feel that the key is to deter adults from purchasing the alcohol for a minor in the first place. Therefore, I urge you to support House Bill number 436. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Next, hear from Janine Henry.
I'd like to pass this around. I don't want to go into what our family was like. You all can see that from the picture. For the record, my name is Janine Henry, and I live at 1038 Dunton, Ketchikan, Alaska. My family and I have come here today to ask for your help. This is my son, Josh. The young woman that you see in that photograph was a young woman that he planned to marry. They were going to marry, go off to college together, have a family. I was told I never have children. And when I had Josh, he's always been like a miracle in my life. A drug destroyed his life. And an adult provided that drug. It's no different than cocaine, heroin, marijuana. It's no different than any other drug. Alcohol is a drug, and there is no way to change that. This accident, alcohol produces more violence than probably any of the other drugs put together. I didn't get to say goodbye to Josh because he was decapitated totally. His head was mashed to where there was nothing of his face remaining. His chest was crushed, his heart was lacerated, his bowels were protruding. There was gashes and gapes all over his body. His genitals, his right hand and his kidney and his bladder were the only thing that were undamaged. This accident, I know, would have never happened had an adult not provided this drug to these boys. I started to talk to Josh about drinking, responsibility, and drugs when he was very young and kept talking to him about it, but it didn't do any good. I mean, he knew my stand on it. I helped to make a marijuana bust once. In my community, there were people next door that were selling marijuana. I helped the detectives in my community bust these people. So he knew where I stood on drugs. Attitudes outside of our home influenced his choice, and he made a bad choice. But it was not a choice that I gave my son, or a choice that kids have. Drugs are not a choice. We as adults have chosen to legalize a drug. We need to take responsibility for the destruction it is causing. High-paid lobbyists from the industry color our judgment and common sense, evidently. Why are we not addressing this problem? Marijuana, cocaine, heroin are not legal. It's a privilege to manufacture, distribute, and market a drug. It is not a right under free enterprise in this country. I don't see drug marketing as a right under the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Who's responsible for the teen epidemic of sport drinking? And it is an epidemic, and it is sport drinking. And there is no way to get around it. The teens don't vote. They can't make a decision to get married. They don't manufacture or market drugs. Some sell it, but they are given the drugs by adults. They don't make the laws. That's why I'm here. You folks are the ones that make the laws. You all are responsible to see that our children and society is protected. They look to us for role models and protection while they are trying to grow up, so we can protect them. While they're still children vacillating between youth and adulthood, it is obvious to me that we are failing the most important resource we have, when as many as 80 to 90% of junior and senior are using alcohol. Out of all the drugs, it is the most abused and responsible for the most violent and teen deaths. This bill is not the answer, but it's a step. How many do you think we would actually jail if for the first conviction someone really got a sentence? I mean, if the first person, or maybe we would jail too. I disagree with her figures, because right now we have a law, and no wonder they're not spending any money. Maybe in Ketchikan they get 30 days, 27 suspended, and you could probably count, you wouldn't even take a whole hand to find out who, this law is not enforced. 1 to 2 times a conviction and a real punishment for this, probably we wouldn't have a whole lot of people per year. A sign in every liquor store and every bar saying, you are responsible for what happens if you give alcohol to a minor. You are giving minors drugs. Deal with it the same as you would deal with a drug pusher. When adults quit providing, that's a step. How many? I mean, I really don't think we would have many in the jails. We need to have this publicized. The first person that is arrested and sentenced, it needs to be all over the state on the front page. This is part of the solution. One statement in opposition of this is that there's no money. 95%, from what I understand from Alan Bailey, of all the people that are incarcerated in Ketchikan are alcohol-related crimes. The state of Alaska, and I got this figure from the Department of Revenue, has made $11,930,000 off the sales tax, I'm assuming, of alcohol. Now, I can't find this out, but isn't that supposed to cover the effects of alcohol? Isn't that why the tax is there? The cost of law enforcement, court cost, treatment and prevention, who is paying for that? And why, my question is, if we need money to help counteract that, if this was an oil company, a chemical company, and they were emitting something and people were getting cancer, that company and industry would be held accountable. Exxon can't spill oil all over the ocean and the taxpayers have to clean it up. That industry is responsible. The alcohol industry is polluting our youth and our society. We are an alcoholic state, and if you really take a good look at statistics, we have the highest rate of alcoholism in this nation. So basically, we are into drugs, and there is no way to get around that. This bill is not about budgets, it's about life, and it's about human ecology, saving one youth from addiction. The first time an adult goes out and gives a child or a youth alcohol, that adult can be opening the door for that youth to become an addict. You never, ever know. Is it a worse crime to steal a car or to set a child on a road of addiction? How many date rapes are a result of youth drinking? Any of you have daughters? How do you know that your kids are in that 5%? You don't know, and you don't know if you will be at a funeral parlor. You cannot be sure, because I was sure I wouldn't be. I loved my son. We're Catholics. We go to church. I did everything I knew how to do. And then I trusted. If we don't draw the line, we have to draw a line. I'd like to thank you for your time, and you have to make a choice now. And when you're considering this, remember, there's an adult out there that can violate your family's rights just as one has violated ours, and provide access to a drug to your child, whether it be heroin, cocaine, or alcohol. It could be your son or daughter. My life will never, ever be the same. A part of me died when I buried my son. And there's a lot of things responsible here. The good old boys in this state have to put that attitude away. They can't gunfight in the streets anymore when they became civilized down south. We've got to put away some attitudes if we're going to be progressive and be civilized. And hard drinking, hard working, that's over. It's an epidemic. It is a disease. It is not a game. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear Jake Smith. Just state your name for everybody.
I'm 15 years old. I'm the brother of Josh Smith, friend of Mike's. And I know it goes on in our community. I used to drink sometimes, and I know a few people that have ever not drank. And I know this accident scared a lot of people out of drinking. And I mean, I didn't expect it to change everyone from drinking, but it has changed a few of our lives. And we swore to each other we'd never do it again, and so far we're keeping that. And I think that if this bill was passed, that it would, I know adults are still going by, but it'd scare a few of them, and that would save a few lives. And no family needs to go through what we're going through. And every kid is special to their parents and their brothers in their own way. They just don't need to lose anyone. I think it'd really help. It wouldn't make a total difference. I mean, it wouldn't save everyone, but it would save a few. That'd be really good, I think.
Thank you for testifying. Any questions, everyone? I had one quick one for you to stay for a second. What's your general feeling on the most common way kids your age get alcohol? Is it, what's your sort of observation you've had?
Well, like, if it depends. If you have a few friends that you're really close with, and then you guys all know someone, and you go to someone's house, and just like five or six of you drink. But if you're friends with everyone, then one guy, you go to an older guy's house, and you get, and they get from someone else. I mean, when people get drunk to the extent where it's really easy to tell it's from a buyer, that when people just like have a few beers or something, it's mostly stolen from their parents or something. But the result of most people getting arrested and drunk is mostly from buyers, because no one steals a lot from their parents. Mostly buyers.
Good. Thank you, Jake. Thank you for testifying today. That's all people we've got signed up to testify. We're going to cut. Representative Taylor?
I move the bill be removed from committee with individual recommendations.
Representative Taylor, as you know, that isn't in order at this time. We're still collecting up amendments. We have three or four.
Well, you've got amendments available?
Yeah. We end at 1:30 on Wednesdays because of Judiciary Committee, which I have a bill up in, and Representative Parnell is a member of.
You're not going to be able to move this?
No, okay. Wait. I think Representative Taylor, as you're aware from the way this committee operates, when we have bills and amendments, we make sure we have an opportunity to hear the bill. Anyone who wants to submit an amendment, one of the speakers mentioned one on notice. All those will collect up in the next hearing on the bill. We take them up all at one time and proceed with that. So, any other business come before the committee? Hearing none, please turn.